Chapter 2. Of all the ridiculous expressions people use, and people use a great many ridiculous expressions, one of the most ridiculous is, "No news is good news." No news is good news simply means that if you don't hear from someone, everything is probably fine. And you can see at once why this expression makes such little sense, because everything being fine is only one of many, many reasons why someone may not contact you. Perhaps they are tied up. Maybe they are surrounded by fierce weasels, or perhaps they are wedged tightly between two refrigerators and cannot get themselves out. The expression might well be changed to, "No news is bad news," except that people may not be able to contact you because they have just been crowned king or are competing in a gymnastics tournament. The point is that there is no way to know why someone has not contacted you until they contact you and explain themselves. For this reason, the sensible expression would be, "No news is no news," except that it is so obvious it is hardly an expression at all. Obvious or not, however, it is the proper way to describe what happened to the Baudelaires after they sent the desperate telegram to Mr. Poe. Violet, Klaus, and Sunny sat and stared at the telegram device for hours, waiting for some sign of the banker's reply. As the hour grew later and later, they took turns dozing against the merchandise of the Last Chance General Store, hoping for any response from the man who was in charge of the orphans' affairs. And as the first few rays of dawn shone through the window, illuminating all of the price tags in the store, the only news the children had received was that the shopkeeper had made some fresh cranberry muffins.
"I've made some fresh cranberry muffins," the shopkeeper said, peeking around a tower of flour sifters.
He was wearing at least two potholders on each hand and was carrying the muffins on a stack of different coloured trays.
"Normally I would put them up for sale, between the phonograph records and the garden rakes, but I hate to think of you three children going without breakfast when there are vicious murderers on the loose, so have some for yourself, free of charge."
"That's very kind of you," Violet said, as she and her siblings each took a muffin from the shopkeeper's top tray. The Baudelaires, who had not eaten since they left the village, soon made short work, a phrase which here means ate every warm, sweet crumb of the pastries.
"Goodness, you're hungry," the shopkeeper said. "Did everything go all right with the telegram? Have you received a reply?"
"Not yet," Klaus said.
"Well, don't worry your tiny heads about it," the shopkeeper replied. "Remember, no news is good news."
"No news is good news,"
called out a voice from somewhere in the store. "I have some news for you, Milt. All about those murderers."
"Lo," the shopkeeper called in delight, and then turned to the children. "Excuse me, please," he said. "Lou's here with the Daily Punctilio."
The shopkeeper walked through a bunch of rugs hanging from the ceiling, and the Baudelaires looked at one another in dismay.
"What'll we do?" Klaus whispered to his sisters. "If the newspaper has arrived, the shopkeeper will read that we're murderers. We better run away."
"But if we run away," Violet said, "Mr. Poe won't be able to contact us."
"Daiqui,"
Sunny cried, which meant he's had all night to contact us, and we haven't heard from him.
"Lou,"
they heard the shopkeeper call out.
"Where are you, Lou?"
"I'm over by the pepper grinders,"
the delivery person called out in return.
"And wait till you read this story about the three murderers of that count. It's got pictures and everything. I saw the police on the way here, and they said they were closing in. The only people they allowed in the area were me and those volunteer people. They're going to capture those kids and send them right to jail."
"Kids?" the shopkeeper said. "The murderers are kids?"
"Yep,"
the delivery person replied. "See for yourself." The children looked at one another, and Sunny gave a little whimper of fear. Across the store they could hear the rustling of paper, and then the excited voice of the shopkeeper.
"I know those kids," he cried. "They're in my store right now. I just gave them some muffins."
"You gave muffins to murderers?"
Lou said.
"That's not right, Milt. Criminals should be punished, not fed pastries." I didn't know there were murderers then, the shopkeeper explained, but I sure know now. It says so right here in the Daily Punctilio. Call the police, Lou. I'll grab these murderers and make sure they don't escape.
The Baudelaires wasted no more time and began to run in the opposite direction from the men's voices, down an aisle of safety pins and candy canes.
Let's head towards those ceramic ashtrays, Violet whispered. I think we can exit that way. But what happens when we exit? Klaus whispered back. The delivery person said the police were closing in.
Mulek,
Sunny cried, which meant, let's discuss that at a later time.
Egad!
The children could hear the shopkeeper's surprised voice from several aisles over.
Lou, the kids aren't here. Keep an eye out for them.
What do they look like? The delivery person called back.
They look like three innocent children, the shopkeeper said, but they're really vicious criminals. Be careful.
The children ran around a corner and ducked into the next aisle, pressing themselves against a rack of construction paper and canned peas as they listened to the hurrying footsteps of the delivery person.
Wherever you murderers are, he called, you better give up.
We're not murderers,
Violet cried in frustration.
Of course you're murderers, the shopkeeper answered. It says so in the newspaper.
Plus,
the delivery person said in a sneering voice,
if you're not murderers, why are you hiding and running?
Violet started to answer, but Klaus covered her mouth before she could say anything more.
They'll be able to tell where we are by our voices, he whispered. Just let them talk, and maybe we can escape.
Lou, do you see them? Called the shopkeeper.
No, but they can't hide forever, the delivery person said. I'm gonna look over by the undershirts.
The Baudelaires looked ahead of them and saw a pile of white undershirts that happened to be on sale. Gasping, the children doubled back and ran down an aisle covered in ticking clocks.
I'm gonna try the clock aisle, the shopkeeper cried. They can't hide forever.
The children hurried down the aisle, sprinted past a rack of towel racks and piggy banks, and scurried around a display of sensible plaid skirts. Finally, over the top shelf of an aisle containing nothing but different kinds of bedroom slippers, Violet spotted a glimpse of the exit and silently pointed the way to her siblings.
I bet they're in the sausage aisle, the shopkeeper said.
I bet they're near the bathtub display, the delivery person called.
They can't hide forever,
the shopkeeper cried. The Baudelaires took a deep breath and then bolted toward the exit of the Last Chance general store. But as soon as they got outside, they realized the shopkeeper was right. The sun was rising, revealing the flat and desolate landscape the children had walked across all night. In a few hours, the entire countryside would be covered in sunlight, and the land was so flat that the children would be seen from far, far away. They couldn't hide forever, and as Violet, Klaus, and Sunny stood outside the Last Chance general store, it seemed that they couldn't hide for even one more instant.
Look,
Klaus said, and pointed in the direction of the rising sun. Parked a ways from the store was a square grey van with the letters VFD printed on its side.
That must be the volunteers fighting disease, Violet said. The delivery person said only he and the volunteers were allowed in the area.
Then they're the only way we can hide, Klaus said. If we can sneak aboard that van, we can escape from the police, at least for now.
But this might be the right VFD, Violet said. If these volunteers are part of the sinister secret the Quagmire triplets tried to tell us about, we might be going from a bad situation to a worse one.
Or, Klaus said, it might get us closer to solving the mystery of Jacques Snicket. Remember, he said he worked as a volunteer right before he was murdered.
It won't do us any good to solve the mystery of Jacques Snicket, Violet said, if we're in jail.
Lucin,
Sunny said. She meant something along the lines of, we don't have much choice. And in small, tottering steps, she led her siblings toward the VFD van.
But how will we get on the van? Violet asked, walking alongside her sister.
What will we say to the volunteers? Klaus asked, hurrying to catch up.
Impro,
Sunny said, which meant, we'll think of something. But for once, the three children didn't have to think of something. As the youngsters reached the van, a friendly-looking man with a guitar in his hands and a beard on his face leaned out of one of the windows and called to them.
"We almost left you behind, brothers and sisters," he said. "We filled the van up with free gas, and now we're all set to head off to the hospital."
With a smile, the man unlatched the door of the van and opened it, beckoning to the three children.
"Climb aboard," he said. "We don't want our volunteers to get lost before we even sing the first verse. I heard something about murderers lurking around this area."
"Did you read it in the newspaper?"
Klaus asked nervously. The bearded man laughed and strummed a cheerful chord on his guitar.
"Oh, no," he said. "We don't read the newspaper. It's too depressing. Our motto is, no news is good news. You must be new volunteers not to know that." "Well, hop in."
The Baudelaires hesitated. As I'm sure you know, it is rarely a good idea to get into an automobile with somebody you haven't met before, particularly if the person believes in such nonsense as no news is good news. But it is never a good idea to stand around a flat and empty landscape while the police are closing in to arrest you for a crime you have not committed. And the three children paused for a moment to decide between doing something which is rarely a good idea and something that is never a good idea. They looked at the bearded man with the guitar. They looked at each other. And then they looked back at the Last Chance General Store, where they saw the shopkeeper rushing out of the front door and toward the van.
"Okay," Violet said finally, "we'll hop in."
The bearded man smiled, and the children stepped into the VFD van and shut the door behind them. They did not hop, even though the man had asked them to hop in, because hopping is something done in the cheerful moments of one's life. A plumber might hop, for instance, if she finally fixed a particularly difficult leak in someone's shower. A sculptor would hop if his sculpture of four basset hounds playing cards was finally finished. And I would hop like nobody has ever hopped before if I could somehow go back to that terrible Thursday and stop Beatrice from attending that afternoon tea where she met Esme Squalor for the first time. But Violet, Klaus, and Sunny did not hop, because they were not plumbers fixing leaks, or sculptors finishing works of art, or authors magically erasing a series of unfortunate events. They were three desperate children, falsely accused of murder, forced to run out of a store into a stranger's automobile to avoid capture by the police. The Baudelaires were not hopping, even as the van started its engine and began to drive away from the Last Chance General Store, ignoring the desperate signals of the shopkeeper as he ran to try to stop them. As the VFD van began to drive across the lonely landscape, the Baudelaire orphans were not sure they would ever hop again.